everybody here is very familiar with the background. If there's anything you'd like to discuss or talk about, please speak up. About the design process and our path forward.
So as everybody is well aware, we began improvements to FGE back in the, well, it's been ongoing for many years, but, you know, 1995.
Yeah. Basically.
Yes.
Topped out in 1995.
So we had JBS improvements and an outfall structure in 99, a phased approach to improve guidance and survival by increasing flow into the Galo. Prototypes were developed in 2001 and 2004, and you know, we started with testing in 15 B and C slots, and then FGE work in 17. And then we had the full complement of FGE improvements in 2008 in all units. What's that?
Are you thinking of changing
improvements?
Oh, we just need to tweak it to get it to work through the operation range. Yeah, it will. Yeah.
They have improvements.
So, yeah, go ahead to the next one. This shows the improvements that we've made. You know, we lowered the gate wall beam. We took the concrete out from elevation 36 down to 31, increased the VBS area. We also put in new VBSs with two screens in the slot. You'll see that the picture there doesn't have the chamfer that was filled in it, but if you can imagine a second screen there. We have the gap closure device and the turning vane. Next slide.
So all of that was done to improve fish guidance efficiency.
That was the philosophy.
That was the idea.
It's only $17 million.
I think we got 1.5%.
Or less.
Well, no, we improved.
It's pretty interesting to look at the course progress report.
It's
and see that Bonneville's guidance efficiency is 2 to 3%. That's what it says. 2 to 3%. What are we doing this for again?
We did not have a lot of fish going through the powerhouse in those routes, but of the fish that went through that route,
11.
Yeah, 11's
in there.
Yeah. So, you know,
that's JBS efficiency you're talking about.
Yeah.
Not FGE.
Guidance. Guidance.
No, it's the 2 or 3% of all the fish passing the dam. That's FGE.
It's still
intake.
2 or 3% of all the fish going through the dam.
Go through the JBS.
But again, the intent was FGE, right?
I mean, that's away from the
JBS. What we constructed.
Yeah.
I'm looking at the overall picture.
I know. I asked the same question. Go ahead.
So we conducted our biological evaluation. Well, okay, let me back up here. So after our full complement was installed back in 2007, we saw problems at the smolt monitoring facility, conducted inspections, couldn't find anything wrong in the powerhouse, and the management decision was, you know, requested to decrease flow through the turbine. You know, they saw improvement at the smolt monitoring facility. We went back, you know, into 2008, 2009. We decided to press forward with a biological evaluation.
Post-construction.
And found that there was a link between higher turbine flow and survival through the JBS system. And survival decreased as turbine flow went up. So PDT basically was born around that time with the charter and to address this problem. Next slide.
I think I'm up now.
Okay.
But I'm going to stand up because that way I can point at the screen. Come up with the design that was implemented at the full powerhouse. We used a lot of different hydraulic models, physical models. The key one for coming up for the VBS design was a 1 to 12 month. Next slide. And no, you can't read this. That's not the point of this. But we collected velocity on the VBS both the normal velocity and the parallel velocity. We came up with a set of porosity plates that needed to be given, and you can't read these numbers either, but it shows you what the porosity should be at each of these panels. And it was done in a 1 to 12 model. Next slide. And this is kind of just to give you a history. This is, oops, I'm sorry. Maybe I'm a little too close to it. There are three plots on here. And the 2004, no, original, which is early, is this line. And our target is to be less than a foot per second, or a foot per second is the target. 2001 configuration, which was before we added the additional VBS, we made the VBS taller, was out in here. 2004 model studies, the green was where we ended up. What you have is everything is less than a foot per second, and it's relatively uniform. But the goal is less than a foot per second. There's no real hot spots. Next slide. We prototype tested that 2009, 2010. We actually measured velocities on the VBS screen. Next slide. P&L did it. This is just to give you an idea of how there is no porosity plates at the top. It's plain. It's just the wedge wire screen.
Hold on a second. I thought we were in on the. Apparently, we're not connected.
Okay.
So let me hang up and call back real quick. Sorry. Go ahead, Lori.
Okay. Primarily, the screen is wedge wire with different porosities. And what you can't see is behind here is a steel plate that has different holes in order to generate the different porosities. So when we wanted it clean, there's no plate behind the wedge wire screen up here. And then there's a certain hole pattern that gives us a 45.6% porosity.
Welcome to AT&T teleconference service. Please enter your access code, followed by the pound
sign. Porosities as you go up.
To join the conference as the host, press star. Please enter your host password, followed by the pound sign. Please enter the security code. You entered 6464122. To accept, press 1. Otherwise, press 2 to at the tone. Please speak your name.
Portland District.
There are 2 participants on the call, including you. You are joining your conference as the host. For a menu of available commands, press star pound.
And you can skip ahead 2 slides. And this was the data that we got back from P&L when they collected velocity data. Please note that this is looking into the VBS. That will become important for me to remember a little bit later on with the figure. So this particular one is looking into the VBS.
Looking downstream.
Yes.
You're going into the paper.
Hopefully downstream, unless you have something horribly wrong.
Yes.
Is that you, Catherine?
Yeah, that's me.
Okay. Sorry about that.
That's okay. Just, you know, trying to figure out how to get your attention here.
Sure.
Next slide.
You have the slideshow up, Catherine?
Yeah, I had that part working. I just, when I called in on the line, no one else was on it.
Oh, yeah, we were still called in. Weird. Anyway.
Oh, no, you'd gotten cut off, it looked like, because didn't have you on the line.
Okay.
Thanks. Everything seems to be working now.
Okay.
So, biological results had identified an issue. And the important part to note in here is this is the panel that has no porosity behind it, and this is the next panel up. There seems to be fish there.
That's a solid panel.
No, there's only ledge water. It's 100% porosity, and this is like 62.
No porosity.
Yeah, it's very, very low.
Just ledge water.
A lot of water goes through these two, or can.
Right.
Next slide. So, they started the alternative study. We updated a CFD model in order to have a design tool to help us in our evaluation. When we updated that CFD model, we used the 1 to 12 model to validate it. Why that is important is you need to be able to represent that VBS, that porosity, through parameters, and we used the 1 to 12 data to set it. We also did a proof of concept, the turbulent reduction devices, slot fillers. We did an evaluation where we looked at the evaluation, how these fared. We also took additional gate well velocity measurements. And that was an eye-opening for the hydraulic design proof. Next slide. Hot spots all the way across the panel. This particular one is in 15, so it is without the gate slot fillers. Right, 15 did not have gate slot. So it's got 1.6 feet per second velocities coming across right on here. 14 had.
This is field data. This is field measure velocity.
And we did the A's. We did A slots.
We did A slots.
The worst case scenario. Okay.
Yeah, well, the I can't say that. The gate slot fillers. I can't. I'm sorry. The gate slot fillers were in 14A.
Yes.
Yeah. So 15A was our surrogate for with and without. So this is without, so it's 1.5 feet per second right here. But with them in it, it's 1.6 feet per second. We didn't expect this. We didn't believe it. We spent a lot of time. This is real data. Next slide. But what we know is these purple circles are the new data, prototype data. They match really well. We could not get the velocity down in the bottom, instrumentation issues. But matches really well until the upper two panels. So what we're proposing to do as the next steps is utilizing the prototype data that we have. So we have the 210 PNNL data, we have the Harbor data that was just taken. We also have some STS data that was taken in 1997. And the benefit of the STS data that was done by Jensen is it gives us this velocity and this velocity through different porosities on that STS. With the goal of doing a parametric study to give us a handle on how porosity, flow, and the coefficients that we need to understand, those get translated into a CFD model. Because now we need to calibrate the CFD model to the prototype versus the 1 to 12, using the physical data to calibrate it. Goal is to calibrate, then validate. And what we mean by validate is we would set those parameters, and then we would rerun other flows with and without gate slot fillers. In the CFD model. The other thing that we want to do is to take additional prototype data. And that additional prototype data requires doing something to the upper two panels. Changing the porosity to the panel 8. Could you go back? There. Panel 8. And doing something with panel 9. Because obviously these velocities, the hot spots right in here. We've got too much water going through those upper panels. So
is that a result of those upper panels having too high a porosity or the lower panels having too low a porosity? I mean, is this a rebalancing or just simply fixing those top two? And wouldn't the model be better? A physical model be better for working this out?
if the physical the physical model didn't pick it up in the first place.
Those were developed in the 1-12 physical model.
It wasn't there.
Those were.
Those were. Yeah. That's part of the issue that we've come to. Is now, when we look to the future of what we need to do, we have to think really carefully about the tools that we have to work with.
Because the physical model did not show us the hotspots.
But with the TRDs in place, we didn't have that. So they...
No, the plot that you had was...
They were there before.
The
Without the TRDs.
They're without the TRDs. The TRDs do not make the hotspots.
Mm-hmm. They make it worse, but...
They make it a little bit worse because we get a little bit more... We have a little bit narrower volume of flow to go up.
To the top.
But that slot, that plot of velocities... Back up one more.
Back up?
No, go forward.
Forward to the next one.
Forward? Yeah, this one. This is without gate slot
though. Okay.
And actually the physical model was the 1-12 physical model was a single section, a single bay.
Right.
Sectional model.
And with no slots.
It had no slots. So it would be the most similar to one of our bays with TRDs in place. If you were to compare apples to apples, as far as the slots are concerned.
Okay.
So, do I have an opinion? Yes. Do I know what we need to, what I think we need to do? We need to get the prototype data with blockage changed up here to see if that alters the velocity here.
Or we can just be chasing a hotspot around.
Correct. We could be. But we need to, the hope is that with the parametric study and with doing the prototype test in here, we can develop tools for design, but more importantly, we can then pick what porosity
so
plates
need to be up. So your thinking now is, I mean, forget the TRDs, and I'd like to, that you may be able to deal with this just by balancing these
porosities. Yes, that's not what I said. No. I don't believe...
I didn't say that what you said, I'm just throwing that out there as a... It sounds like that's where you're going. Or could go. Because I still have problems with those TRDs one way or the other.
I believe that we have a hydraulic issue with the panel, the BBS panel as currently happening.
Right, you understand that.
And with or without the TRDs in place. With or without.
Right, and if we could solve this without the TRDs, I think we would be steps ahead. So, you know, I don't know that it stresses me to hear that we're even talking about TRDs yet.
We're not.
Mm-hmm. I don't think we're talking about...
No, I've been hearing you talk about putting them back in and doing some more tests.
No. Test, the validation was to take... Okay, when I want to validate the model... It's purely a CFD analysis.
I heard TRD as well.
So, no, the only thing I want to test...
Well, you wouldn't say it, but, you know...
What we want to test is modifying the porosity behind panel 9 and behind panel 8.
Sure, that makes sense.
We haven't specified what porosities we want to test. It is anticipated in my mind... the team has not discussed, that we really want to push it so that we get a broader range of data so it adds to the parametric study so that, in fact, we can make smarter decisions for the long run for the prototype and for the long run. But that only gets us to two things. One, we understand what's going on here. We actually come in and we block this porosity and we get rid of the hot spots. Then, if we validated the CFD tool, it gives us the ability to look at ways to reduce flow. Or, right now, we have to figure out how to do it.
When you say reduce velocities or reduce flow
in the gate well?
Flow in the gate well. I mean, it's a tool. If the CFD will validate out, it becomes a design tool to help look at ways to reduce flow.
Okay, so mm-hmm. that maybe changes in the VBS or whatever we might
do. Whatever some way of valve. Yeah.
Right. Change the turn.
Because I, you know,
that's what I was going to say. Because it might just come down to you can't. You have too much water going up the gate well, and no matter what you do.
Well, it may be not the hot spots that are causing the problem. We see dead fish there because they die as a result of turbulence. They get sucked from the hot spot. Hot spot's not the problem. It's the turbulence from the velocities that's really the problem. So,
or it could be the fact that you just have too much flow from the gate well.
Well, that leads to that. Yeah, exactly, Tom. So that's why I was trying to. I'm just hoping we're not focusing on hot spots, but on the room environment.
What we really need is we need a tool that allows us to propose things to test that we can then test in an affordable way in the prototype. And right now we don't have that tool. Whether the CFD will validate out is an unknown. The prototype data, I think, on the parametric study for that is really important. The only thing we can say is that we didn't anticipate this happening.
Is that just the slot here, or did you just only do slot A? I mean, standards here.
It occurs in slot A at medium flows. We also did the C slot, and it was there as well.
Oh.
It's just not at 1.6. The high velocities always track right to this same location in the VBS. Whether it's in excess of the criteria, which is the issue, in my opinion, here.
You probably said this. This is completely clean. Everything was clean when you did
yes.
all the
yes.
tests, so there's no yeah. problem.
No, there is no debris no. issues on this at all.
Okay.
And so we spent a lot of time with the AE and internally digesting this data.
Mm-hmm.
Our assumption was the data was wrong.
Mm-hmm. Right, or in debris or something causing it.
Yeah. Yeah. Or the instruments were in backwards. Or the instruments.
They got tired of us asking questions about them. Let's put it that way.
Very tired.
The TRD test that Lori was talking about, that you were asking about, isn't to put the TRDs back in the prototype. It's to take advantage of the data that we have from this past spring.
Okay, and so then you're going to validate using those data already collected.
Right, so we'll calibrate the CFD to one of those data sets and then change the geometry in the CFD model to put the TRDs back in the CFD model because it's a changed
condition.
It's
in the model, though.
Right, it's
only
a changed condition.
Okay. I just heard
so
that.
And sure.
Just
was
like, oh. See if it lines up with
see
the actual.
No, that makes sense. That's validation.
Yes. All the prototype data with the TRDs that we need exists.
So it's a good data set for us for a changed condition.
Yeah. No, got it.
So that's what we'll use that
got
for.
Got it.
We're just a clever name.
Makes sense.
And so,
but and that's what the data that we're talking about collecting is in the winter, spring, whatever it is, will give us as well if we push it hard enough. If we're trying to, you know, get it exactly right and creep up to the right answers, we might not get good data for our tools. There's going to be a balance there.
That's why we want to push the porosities on those upper plates to really give us a different data set. The one thing that I needed to point out, and we need to do this test when we can maximize the yield. One of the issues that we've had at B2 and FGE work is we've not always timed our test where we can max the Q through the yield. We're very much head-driven, tailwater-driven, of when we can actually have enough tailwater to be able to push the Q up as high as we wanted to. All the previous work that we did, 2000, 2004, 2008, our max was about 15.8. We really need to be pushing to the 17.3, 17.5s if we can, which is why we're looking to do the test just before, in the March timeframe. Because that's when the tailwater is starting to come back up, and we can actually do the test. And again, it's just prototype velocity measurements that we want to take. We've batted around some things. But again, it's what we'd be doing is altering at least the porosity on these two panels.
Do you know how much flow we get up the gate wall without the screening?
Without the VBS. Or without the STS.
Without the STS.
Without
the STS.
I don't think we've done anything.
Because we do still collect fish once we have them out. We pull them and we still get fish up there. So there's something going up there. There's flow.
Just about as many as we have with them in.
Exactly. So is it worth measuring it? What does it take to make that determination? Is it worth keeping them in?
Right. Right.
Keeping STS in.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
We're kind of close to where it doesn't make much sense. You know, we can't really find a good solution.
Measuring it. What does measuring it mean, right?
No,
if you measure it in the field, that can be difficult. We could also, that could be something
that's a good
that
model.
We consider looking at in the CFD model down the road. You know, that comes to the alternatives evaluation.
So my simple perception of this problem is we have too much water going up the gate. Well, what does that mean? And what goes up all by itself, and what are we adding to?
Was that ever done in Erdick when we were working with this stuff?
I can't recall. We might have done it without an FPS in a 1-25 model. I did put together a bunch of charts.
I don't remember anything without an STS in place.
With the STS in place, but without turning main, without a gap.
Yeah, there's all those things that changed.
Done some of the combinations in the CFD, the previously calibrated CFD.
I think because the original design when the powerhouse was built to have the STS in, so we never thought about it.
We have different angles. There is data from 1-25 data with different angles of the STS.
And elevation.
But I don't ever remember anything with any zero STS.
But I mean, Scott's got a good point.
The
JBS folks were seeing a lot of fish, and pit tags, back that up going through the system, even without screens in place.
But there was a reduction.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, most definitely.
But there's still a lot.
But we're thinking we're killing someone because of the turbulence is so bad. So how do we make the trade-off as to what's better? Let a few more go through the turbines and getting better survival through your video.
That's pretty easy to calculate, really.
Gary, please
survive. I did not ask the proportions.
I mean, could you also change the angle of your STS and reduce some of the flow going up in there and still kind of get a compromise of benefits there?
Or change the STS altogether to a VBS that's shortened. Yeah. I mean, there's lots of ideas.
You can modify the turning vane and you slot in.
Or the turning vane, right.
There's a lot of things, and there's a lot of things that we can do from effect from the outside without having to go into the units. There's lots of stuff. But right now we'd like to be able to replicate a data set for the prototype.
Yeah, you're just working on the model on your tools right now, and we're trying to get ahead.
Some of those things are not just get rid of it.
I know what I'm trying to fix, but what I'm trying to get at is, what am I really trying? What's my ultimate goal? Is survival point? And now, can we get there from here, or is there an easier way?
Do we have a combination system? Do we pull the STS and A, leave it B and C?
And that's come up, and I don't know what the pressures are there where you have within the unit. What does that do within the unit? Is there a back pressure on VBS?
I was gonna tell Bob to run it without the A screen in, and then pull the B one as well, and see what happens if we just run with one screen. See if they see it on the performance. I don't think they will.
I think you got to do it just to check.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think it's worth doing, and we've got the unit in its running.
Well, if you've got it, I mean, you're talking about the unit. I'm wondering about the screen itself, too, with hydraulics that are now swirling around that screen. The screens, there's a definite hydraulic. When they get all three screens in place, that flow comes through and expands dramatically behind the screen. Now you take two of those out and leave one in, or maybe two in. That expansion is going to have an effect on that other screen. Somehow. How much? I don't know.
I don't know if it will. I mean, I just don't know if because first off, the intakes are isolated. So
there's piers there.
There's piers all the way out to the forebay. So we might get a back pressure.
To the forebay, yeah.
But from the back side.
Back side is what I'm worried about.
And again, it's I would like
would
to
still
see,
want to bang it back and forth in
which
there.
Which is why what I'd like to do is have Bob do it and put a pressure transducer on the backside of the C screen. I think that'd be the place where we'd get an answer on
that's
it.
That's what I would do, yeah.
Because if we saw something in the C slot and the B slot, pull A, are we getting something coming around the backside of this, the downstream here?
You're talking about 105.
125.
Yeah,
the actual running model, the
yeah.
turf. Yeah. And it's running anyway.
Yeah.
Or
well,
was.
Would pulling screens at B2 really be a viable alternative?
Survive all the time now. The only problem with that, it is, I think, survival through the turbines is pretty good for Chinook. It's not so good for steelhead. But passage to the corner collector is pretty good for steelheads.
Yeah, you get three. What I think in 11, 10 and 11 for steelhead, well, 17% of all the fish at Pasadena went through B2 turbines. In 2010,
survival was about 89%.
91. It was 92 in 2011.
For steelhead?
And for steelhead, and 3% of the fish went through there.
Right.
Survival was a lot higher through the bypass system than it is through the turbines.
Kind of a lot.
It is.
Well, it's upwards of 98-99% through
the. In 2011, JBS survival was. Was 94%.
You're looking at single release then?
No, I'm not.
It has to be a single release.
It's not.
Are you looking at subs or?
No, I'm looking at steelhead. It says virtual paired release.
That's all right. You wouldn't have met the standard.
Well, it was only 11, it was 2% of the fish went into the bypass.
Yeah.
It was steelhead. Very low at 11.
That's very little overall. Very little impact overall.
I mean, when you look at it, in general, Chinook do pretty well through the turbines.
Yep, 94-95%.
They don't do so well. They do great through the corner collector. We just don't get very many of them. So guidance is higher, but they do have good turbine survival. Steelhead don't have as good a turbine survival, whether it's a size-related thing or whatever. But they do have good guidance through the corner collector. So those two can. That's something we would have to look at. Because they can offset and it can come out pretty good. I mean, given all the trouble that we're going through here. Well, the Unit 11 would be a huge benefit, especially if we designed it right with a better turbine unit.
This discussion.
Why do you laugh? I think that's possible.
We'll get there eventually.
This discussion on screens is relative to what we're looking to do here, but I'd like to hear Lori continue with us and kind of give you a rundown of what we're proposing to do.
Didn't you ask the question?
I asked a question.
You started it all. You started it.
You started a simple question at FGE and somehow got to this pulse train.
I asked a question this morning, okay?
No. You asked it about 5 minutes ago.
Okay. Basically, what we've been talking about, we need to establish a hydraulic baseline we can work off of. Then this stuff is in gray, because if we can't establish a hydraulic baseline, which means that we can't come up with any tools that really work. I don't know why the 1 to 12 didn't do it. I don't know why.
That seems odd to me.
We have some thoughts, but we don't have the ability to go back to the 1 to 12 model.
No. You'd have to build a new one.
And so we'd have to build a new one, and there we're really talking money, and
it's not even the right mess.
Right.
So the entire unit.
The assumption is we're going to be successful to here, and then we would do these things. We would discuss the alternatives, things that have been talked about that are take the gap closure device out, modify the turning vane, put a flow control device on, maybe modify the porosities a little more than we have. All those things would be on the table if, in fact, we think it's the flow up the gate slot.
To include Scott's recommendation to remove the screens.
Including, or a combination of removing some of the screens. You know, you might remove screens on the A slot and live with and then have B and C be, because the flow is reduced in those two, that you don't have the same issues when we fix the... But those would be alternatives that would be assessed with the tool when we have it. The assumption is we will come up with something that we can implement in the field that is acceptable. And acceptable probably means cost-effective. And hopefully something we can implement without having to take units out of service. So that's Lori's wish.
1819.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah, but that scares the heck out of me. That's not.
We also have time constraints that we have to continue to deal with. And you're touching on that.
But until we get to here, we don't know how long this is going to take.
Well, I was going to say, everything past what's in black, we need to work that out. Because as you're aware, FYAP is rolling around.
Well, I'd like to see this, really, this ought to be all put in place before we do the next performance test. So, let's get everything done. Because that's the whole idea.
That depends on you guys.
And it's do we have to go this route? I mean, I still think flow control device of some sort, reduce the amount of flow going up the slot to what we've seen with a mid-range operation, and live with the hidden FGE. I'm willing to live with that.
But do we know for a fact that it's flow?
I think it is.
I think that there's turbulence, I think, is key to that.
That's what flow causes.
Not necessarily.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's what's causing the mortalities in there, the fatigue, and it's a, what do? We increase the flow.
A lot.
I think what Lori's laying out, I think, is viability.
Well, it has a long, it takes forever, so I'd rather get to something quicker.
In the short run, could you go with a partial screen and deployment? You know, put the sensors on and figure out something you can actually run that way. I mean, we can do that right away and continue working down the path.
I think what Lori's laid out is worst case scenario when you look at 1819. And I'm thinking that with the right tools in hand, establishing a good baseline, I think it gives us the opportunity to assess alternatives that are more realistic, effective, and efficient. And we can expect that quicker.
But aren't you still 16, 17?
Yeah.
Yeah, but again, that's, you know, what she's laid out is Estelon.
I'd like to see something in there in 15. That's a year and a half.
And that may come to pass, but we need to get to that baseline first. And what we're laying out for you guys is what's in black. What she's laying out is saying, hey, this is what we need to do.
The other side, I think that we really, that if we can establish, we can take the last measurement. So let's say that we wanted to change some of the porosity plates. We recognize we need to make that change. And then we measure it, and we still believe, based on everything that we know, we're going to have too much flow. Because we know that currently, right now, the mid-flow, we know kind of that seems to be acceptable biologically. The question is going to come down is, how do we evaluate what alternative we want to propose to reduce the flow further? How do we evaluate the alternative? How do you evaluate it, and then how do we test it? Because what we can't do is implement it all the way across the project. And so the question is, it's not only coming up with the alternatives, it's coming up with the method of evaluating the alternative and then testing the alternative. To know that you've accomplished what you wanted. And can we do it? We can do hydraulics quick. We can't do biological.
But I think you build a model. I still think that we've said this from day one, the hydraulic, I don't know why we jumped the ship on that.
We don't know why.
I'm not sure that the porosity is the issue. Those upper two panels, they're there under other conditions too, and we have good survival. So to me, unless you're trying to get the highest velocity possible through the gate well, and we're willing to back off from that, which backs off on FGE. I realize that. But getting back to a mid-flow operation, those two panels aren't a problem. They accumulate stuff. If we want to worry about the ability to clean the project, that may be an issue. But from a fish survival standpoint, they're not a problem. So, you know, it almost sounds like we're running down a different rabbit hole here on that one. That's kind of a left field to me. And that porosity through there, if you thought that was the only problem, I don't think it is. I think it's showing up. Yeah, you got a slide of dead fish there because that's where dead fish end up after they die. But, and other debris does too, but I'm not sure that that's causing the dead fish. That fishes are being caused by the turbulence within the gate well, and that's caused in, I think, a large part by the velocity. Why wouldn't it be?
Lori, the 1 to 12 that we were using to design what we've got out there now, did that indicate that we had hot spots out there? So the hot spots really is this phenomenon that we didn't anticipate out there, that was not designed into our feature out there.
It didn't show up in the model, in the 1 to 12 model, so that's why we were a little flabbergasted when the data came in the way it did. And then you go in retrospect and you look back at the other data collected at lower flows, and the hot spots, the higher velocities are still there. The issue to me is we're in violation of criteria. And we're not just a little bit off, we're a lot off. But
those two panels, right.
Those upper panels.
And those can be dealt with, but I'm just not seeing that as the problem. That's just another issue to deal with. But I still think the problem is the volume of flow we have going up the slot. The TRDs didn't address that. They didn't change this. It seems like the shortcut, the easy route to get to resolving this issue is to either remove the screens or to reduce the amount of flow of the slot to some amount, which I assume you guys would have a pretty good idea what that would be or how you would do that at this point in time, given all the years we've worked on this. And it seemed to me that something as simple as a flow control device, which I realize is a problem for the project, or possibly a second flow controlling DBS behind the BBS we have, that seemed like a fairly simple solution to me. You just use that second slot that we already have out there and you put in a porosity control device behind it. And that reduces the amount of flow going out the slot.
The alternative,
simple as can be. I don't know why is that a problem?
The alternatives that you're recommending, we're not dismissing them at all. I think what we're saying is we need to get to a place where we have a good hydraulic baseline where we know and understand the dynamics that are taking place out there before we start investigating alternatives that could cost a lot of money to implement, and we're not sure that they're going to work.
All I'm saying is we've been doing this for too many years, and we should have that information by now. And all I'm saying is that at this point in time, I would expect a solution, something that we could put in. I mean, I could.
But I would have expected the 1 to 12 data from the physical model to have been right.
Do we not know what the flow is up the slot?
Do we have any idea?
Yes, at 15 KCFS operation versus 17.
370.
We have an estimate.
Can we get back to that velocity?
No.
Can we do that?
What we know now, based on the more recent data, is we have an estimate based on the flow velocity through the BBS of the upper part. We don't have all of it. So we could give you a relative, we can give you probably a very educated guess of the flow through it and how it changes as we drop off on the units. We can do that. And we know how, from the physical model, how the turning vane and its variations impacted it. What we don't know is if you actually put something in that second VDS slot, if in fact it would not I don't know how the velocities would behave as you try to control the flow there. We don't know. We don't know. Yeah.
One of our alternatives in our report was putting in sliding adjustable perf plates within the DDS.
Right.
Kind of gets to the gear second.
So you got two holes, or you got holes that line up.
Yeah.
Line up.
But on the other hand, if we're willing to live with it on a permanent basis, is modifying the turning vane.
I'm okay with that too.
Yeah. So,
I mean, those are the kind of options, but I guess I would expect us to be at a point where we could actually go out and build and test those options this fall. Okay, next year, but quickly. I didn't expect us to have to develop a whole new tool to get to that point.
Well, I don't think we did either.
We don't have.
That's what I'm hearing. We didn't.
We have a CFD model, right?
Right.
And right now, we need to recalibrate. And that's what Rory's outlined. That's a step we need to take so that we have a tool that we can use to double check those options.
5 years between now, 2013 and 2018, 5-6 years before we get out there and do something. That's unacceptable. I mean, that's all I'm seeing. It's full implementation. You know, that's way out there. That's crazy. Crazy far out.
I don't know that that's what we're saying.
Right? Well, I'm just reading it off the map.
I mean,
off the wall. Sorry.
So what we do know is that the tool needs to be, if we're going to use the tool to reevaluate alternatives, to pick a couple that look the most promising, that's something that Rory said, and we all agree that, at least we agree, that we need to evaluate these alternatives somehow before we implement them out there to make sure that we're not going to cause another problem. You know, we're not going to end up with another hydraulic pinch point somewhere that will end up with another issue that will chase it around.
Okay.
I mean, some of the earlier alternatives that we looked at when we did the EDR for flow control device alternatives, we ended up decreasing the flow of the gate well but pushing more through the gap. And is that going to end up being an issue where you have really high velocities through the gap? Something to really consider.
Or would you affect the effectiveness of the STS by
having high velocities?
Well, you're going to. We know that.
Yeah.
So there's no doubt about that.
Sensitivity.
The flow is going to go somewhere.
Right. So we don't want to cause an impingement somewhere else if we're relieving conditions in the gate well. It's something we need to consider. And if we can do it in the tool that we have, we should do it. We just need to recalibrate it. So that's the more known part of what we need to move forward with.
But you don't have any field data for the gap. As you said, you couldn't collect field data on two plates of the underservice.
We don't have field data for the conditions for the spring from the gap now.
So this is where the physical model seems to make more sense, because you can, all those things are in there. It's all part of the model. You just have to put the instrumentation where you need to put it.
But it's not in the physical model.
The gap.
No, she's saying that the physical model was wrong, so, and there is no physical model. So.
Well, I mean, what we're saying is that you can't build one, and that seems interesting.
Can we use the real turbine? I mean, you were able to get the data. There's a reason you can get the data. So you probably need to solve that problem. Why not just use the turbine as the model?
But the reason we couldn't get down into the bottom two panels was just because the frame wasn't strong enough to get. And we could solve that problem, but we can still estimate the flow through the BBS. It's just it's not an exact number. So I just needed to qualify that we didn't have it down to the bottom two panels, so there's a guesstimate on our part in estimating the flow through the BBS. We're in the ballpark. And relatively speaking, as you go from different total queues through the units, we're definitely getting it on that. There are a lot of things you could test in the prototype, but the problem with that is you're testing one event, we're only testing a part of the unit, and what are we missing? We've done that enough to ourselves where we...
Do you guys feel you guys are accurately estimating what's going through the gap? You can take field data, because that might have been some of the problems, and maybe we're thinking more or less it's going to be the gap than actually is.
The gap closure device?
Yeah.
that's throwing, if we thought more was going through there, it turns out it's acting much more of a narrow orifice and it's pushing much more of the cable than we thought. That could help explain why you're seeing this extra flow, which we didn't even have seen from the 11, I mean, from the prototype from our modeling. I don't know, and you guys said you couldn't get any field data down there to test what actually was coming through there.
But are they actually seeing more flow, or are you just seeing higher velocities?
What Lisa was talking about is the CFD model shows that we would shoot more flow through the gap if we started to channel that, if we started to block out the flow.
That makes sense.
What we don't know is in the prototype with the gap closure device, what type of flow conditions exist between the turning vane and the gap closure device. The instrumentation that we've been able to put in has gone down in the 2000 and the earlier data, we were able to get down pretty close to the bottom of the VBS, but we did not get down into the turning vane or the gap closure device. To the actual prototype, relatively speaking, how much is going through the gap closure device, we're using the physical model data from the 1 to 25.
Now with the questionable results for the physical model, all we can do is now kind of give a relative number. You know, we know it affects the gate will flow somehow. It might be in terms of percentage, but not in, we'd have to kind of look at it in terms of percentage impact versus the quantity impact. But, you know, it was suggested to me, and it depends on how, you know, listen to what Gary said about, you know, possibly forsaking some FGE. It was suggested to me, or quick thing to look at, was to remove the gap closure device. There are, and they're bolted in at the moment with the idea that we could remove them if we need it. And we don't have to necessarily remove them from all the intakes. So maybe just look at the, you know, it was suggested that maybe the high flow band, because we probably have a good feel for B and C being what we know about flow distribution in each intake.
Right.
They are less, and it seems like they kind of now, those type of, maybe those two bays might match what we saw at 15, you know, and so that was such a suggested to me, and that's something that our team was suggested that we seriously consider, and I, you know, I
don't like Wisconsin. Yeah, I mean, let's use the prototype.
And then that's the prototype, you know, possibly.
If it's wrong, then we really got a problem.
Yeah.
the thing, if we consider that, just like we would. One of the things we'd want to do in the 1 to 25 turbine model is, the other thing we'd want to look at is if we start to remove the gap closure device. The issue is that release speeds, because we know that there'll be fish that'll come down and around and end up going through that gap closure device. Let's make sure we understand bead behavior that ends up near the roof of that A slot. Because if I remember correctly, that all ends up going right near the hub.
Yeah.
And so it's not that the gap, removing it may not be, it may be something we can quickly do, could do in the A slot, but we need to be recognizing where we're willing to trade off FGE because we have high turbine survival. But if we're going to end up putting those fish in a poorer spot, we just need to be aware that
we're just trading things.
Yeah.
One issue for.
So we have a tool where we can look at that.
Yeah.
We could release speeds in the upper, right underneath the roof.
We know where they're going to go. I know what will happen. They'll end up in those high velocity ropes that we see coming off the deflector of the unit. There's no doubt about that. That's right where they'll end up. No doubt whatsoever.
So to the point we made earlier, If we go and we establish our baseline here, it's got to be understood that we have a very dynamic system out there, a very dynamic situation out there. And I don't think it's good practice to go out there and start tweaking things without knowing what you're looking for, what you're expecting. So again, if we establish a good hydraulic baseline, we'll know what we're playing with out there when we go out there to do what we're going to do out there with the prototype. And it also gives us a good place to start from to evaluate potential alternatives. What I don't want to do is start cherry picking and say, well, let's try this and let's try that, only to find out.
Well, it's not cherry picking. We've been at this for a lot of years. We've been doing this for decades. I'm just tired of it's time to get to the solution.
And keep in mind that
we're having a hard time with just trying to get the operation nailed down.
talking about counting on the CFD model, which is the same CFD model that told us the TRDs would work and also didn't see these hotspots, so we're somehow going to recalibrate it, and it's going to be the miracle that's going to save this whole thing, and I don't know if I have
the prototype may be the miracle. Yeah. The problem is doing the work in the prototype is expensive, and we can't see it. So the advantage of both physical models and CFD models is being able to visualize flow through a larger domain. We can't visualize flow through the prototype. The answer here may be the prototype is the only tool we have.
It will be the only tool we have for certain things.
Because right now, I don't know
that. We
don't
have a lot of faith in CFD. That's just, right, you know, that's...
I
have a good reason for it.
I don't have faith in the 1 to 12 model.
I understand that.
So
I do have faith in the prototype.
We have faith in the prototype.
I have faith in the prototype.
And I think we've got some ideas. We've been through alternative analysis over and over again on this thing.
And Gilbert's work, you know, you make
a
change.
We went down the road with the TRDs and they didn't work.
Well, wait. Let's just very briefly talk about the TRDs and whether or not they work or not.
They didn't work.
Biological.
There's the perception that they did not work. And the fact is, they did. They did for what they were intended to do. They did streamline hydraulic conditions.
They didn't improve survival.
Wait.
That's what they were designed to do.
There was an assumption that was made. The assumption was that there were no hot spots up to begin with. So if you take that into account, the TRDs worked because they did streamline the hydraulic conditions. And
sure.
But it did not address the long-term objective, and that was reduce mortality.
Right.
But we did not know that there were hot spots out there before we went down this venture.
I still don't think the hot spots are your only problem.
But again, I want to make sure it be clear that we just didn't try something that didn't work because we didn't know what we were doing. We tried something, it did work, but it didn't give us the results that we were anticipating because there were other variables that were in play that we were not aware of. So we need to reevaluate our results.
Figure out a way to cut the flow down to what you get with 15K through the unit. Figure it out. That's all I'm saying. It's
but
not
you
that
can
hard.
Live with the reduction in
yes.
flow
yes.
over
yes.
the low flow.
Reduction in FGE, yes, to resolve this issue.
Because that's a whole lot different question than trying to maintain that flow over a range of units.
And we've been saying that. I think if you go back to some of our responses and letters, which we've said we will accept a reduction in FGE to get this issue resolved. What we don't want is killing fish in the gear house.
No, that's understood.
We're trying to get away from that. But reduction in FGE, it's not going to be huge because FGE is pretty bad out there already. So, you know, that's...
We're on the same page on this.
It's not going to be down to zero.
But what we're saying is we want to approach this methodically. We just don't want to try something.
But methodically, it's going to take us 5 years, 6 years. That's way too long for this kind of
issue. It depends on what we find. It might not be...
A couple of years. I was expecting you guys to come in with some solutions next year. I was. We've been on this thing for, a decade? Just about. It's time to get it. I mean, this isn't that big a deal. Let's get it done. Let's move on to something else. We got bigger issues like the spillway to deal with at Bonneville Dam. We could start with a clean slate and list the problems at Bonneville, and we'd probably go for 2 hours. And this is just one of them. We need to move on. This next topic, too, is another one of those I get sick of.
We're going to put the rest for you.
What's that?
We're going to put it to bed for you.
I've got some ideas, too, to kill it. But, you know, we need to move on. Some of these things are just dragging on and on and on. Some of the orifice ones, that's dragging on and on.
Well, again, this is what we're going to do.
And that's what you're proposing to do. I think you're asking for advice from the fish managers, or are you just telling us?
I think we're asking for concurrence.
Okay. You don't have it. Not from yellow fishers, not at this point.
Okay.
No, that's true. That's what I'm saying.
So if we don't have concurrence.
It's not going to work. You're outside the buy-off already.
So if we don't have concurrence, what's your proposal?
I just threw it out there.
That is?
Cut back the flow to
figure out what you have to do to get the flow to match before you get the gate well when you're operating at 15K.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, 50K is safe for fish.
Whatever's safe for fish, let's get down to that flow.
There you go.
The rest of it's going to take time.
Or we could operate the powerhouse to address.
We could. We need you guys to allow us to do that. You guys are not, we have laid out an operational plan at FPOM, and the Corps of Engineers and EPA are unwilling to accept that plan. So I'm still left with figuring you're just going to go ahead and run to the upper end of 1%, whatever you need to. Because you guys aren't accepting our proposed operation.
Tom's talking about putting another SOR or another operating change form, and just to try to get somebody to pay attention.
So I would like to see a solution so we don't have to go down that path. Because that path is, it's
the best path.
These guys are going to pay money for
operational methodology to get to this, but it's not one that's accepted by the whole region.
Right.
So,
and it is a big issue. I mean, this is a small issue, except that it turns into a big issue because we see dead fish, buckets of dead fish out of Bonneville Dam. That gets everybody excited. So every TMT about mid-May, we're all at loggerheads over what to do because of the buckets of dead fish that are showing up out of Bonneville.
What we don't know is where those fish are dying.
What's that?
What we don't know is where those fish are dying.
No, they're in the gateway.
Oh, boy. Are you thinking they're floating in?
Well, maybe they're hitting the screen. Maybe the screen's killing them, and then the flow's pushing them up into the gatewell.
Well, you know, we had those screens in there when we were running at those flows back before we did the FGE work.
Right. But we had, this is what we had, hydraulic relief over the top of the STS.
Well, yeah, and maybe that's what you have to have.
So the quick look on the back of that, look what the gap closure device...
And maybe that's why turbine survival was lower.
The gap closure device contributes to the gatewell flow that we added.
Oh, you're going to blame that.
No, I'm not. I'm just.
You get your hydraulic relief back and you.
145. Yeah. Well, and I'm not saying that isn't the thing to get rid of. Yeah, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying let's get back to those flows that we don't see as much.
I need to excuse myself here, but. What?
Yeah. What I would run to.
What?
It's definitely getting better.
What up there do you see that's not acceptable?
FY 18-19.
No, talk about what's in dark, what's in black.
Well, you're doing a lot of tool refinement, a lot of model development, but that's not in developing the alternatives.
Is
the guy in the bathroom,
or
well,
she really wants?
Yeah,
no.
She wants to know George out the door.
No. And she's right. We better reassess alternatives. Alternatives should have been black, not grayed out.
But as we've been talking all along, that doing some of what we've been talking about today, so you're saying, well, should we pull the gap out? Should we change turning gauge? Should we do that? Pulling up that list of alternatives again and figuring out what can we do the most cost-effectively, the soonest, the easiest, most biologically effectively without screwing something else up. That's our next step, along with refining the CFD model. It needs to not be gray, because that's what we need to do next. We don't have the answer.
It's not a bad
yet.
Approach.
We don't have the answer yet today.
The time is what's got me most concerned.
Right, the long-term time.
Right.
But the next step is to really pound through that list and figure out what we can do. But at the same time, we need to have a way to double-check these things before we put them out there. Or know that we can test a single unit out in the field.
Right.
Well, that might be the way to go. Whatever testing method is most appropriate for the things that float to the top, right, we'll figure that out.
Yeah.
That has to happen in parallel.
And if you flip that reassessment alternatives up above and start getting into that, or it's concurrent.
Well, I think we do it concurrently. CFD model, then we've got staff lined up to start doing that next week to recalibrate to the data we've got.
Then that starts to bring that bottom line up.
Yes, it does. And that's why we don't know exactly what the timeline is for the rest.
Yeah, you probably should have just left the great stuff completely off of the snap.
We talked about that.
And we'd be all going, oh, yeah, okay, that sounds good. You just don't, as long as I didn't ask the question of schedule, we'd be in good shape.
There's some potential of some things. We're going in, and right now we've got a prototype velocity measurement test.
that we're proposing where we're concentrating on the porosities of those upper pans. There are other things we could test. For example, and not saying this is one we would ever implement, but those STSs do come out. And you could do a test with two different turning vanes to the A slot. And again, what you're getting then is you're getting a prototype estimate of the change in the flow of the gauge line.
That's now, a good alternative.
Now, but those are the issue we believe is that may be how we test most things. But those are the types of things that we could do. I don't know if we could make that happen in March, because I don't know how we would do it, because we don't have a structural year or a mechanical person here that's working on this. But those are the types of things we can't make it permanent, Gary, because we need to get back to the existing system.
Could we get an exemption to that, though, Lori? Could we agree to run one of the A slot without a string and make it a permanent fix to get to expedient?
No, I said change the turning thing, not the STS.
No, correct. Yeah. But you'd have to make a permanent change to test it.
So you mean change the turning vane permanently and then have an exemption to just keep running that way or run
either run that way or run it without a screen in slot A because it's not
right thing or now.
I mean that way you get there quicker. You have to physically take torch and cut that off for hours work.
So we don't have to fab a new one. I mean, if there's some modification that we can do that expedites things.
I mean, you're not going to change the old one is still going to be. You don't want any jagged edges. You're not going
to
do that.
No, no. We would. You would have to be smooth.
It would be smooth, but shortened.
Yes.
Good.
Then we
could
put teeth on the bottom.
What you're proposing here is in addition to what we have up there in black.
Well, it's just adding another prototype velocity measurement test. So instead of just looking at porosity, take the risk of putting a little bit of a switch on one turning vane on a unit. Then we'd have to recognize we're making a permanent turning vane change, and which unit do we want?
Well, then can you put one of those into the C slot if you just don't want it in a super active slot? Sure.
Yes.
You don't have to leave it name.
Yeah.
Plug and play.
See, everything you're saying is really a reassessment of alternatives, and these are new alternatives that we're looking at.
Well, but it's not reassessment on a piece of paper. She's talking reassessment.
Some of the downs.
Of course.
Yeah. Yeah. Real prototype data that I believe.
Well, let's try that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's been kicked around, sure.
10 years down the road, you might get this one.
Reassessment to us, I think, means come up with the list, think through what do they really mean. How would we test them? Could we really test them in a reasonable time frame?
You know, think them through a little bit.
It's a brainstorming session.
Right.
And maybe the screen.
And then what comes up to the top out of that? And
we don't know that. We don't know because they don't turn that off. And
put it on paper.
Yeah, that's kind of like that's what I had in mind a little bit more on the dig in and start doing something.
So that's one of the things
that can be an easy change down the road if it works.
So Gary, before I leave, what are we agreeing to? Are you guys going to continue the discussion? What are we agreeing to before I leave?
That you're leaving.
We got your concurrence. Yes, we have the absolute concurrence on what we've got up there, right?
In black.
The reassessment alternatives. I agree.
As long as it's in parallel.
Yeah.
As long as you're doing it in parallel, I'm fine.
Yeah, and if you guys are working on the tools.
Yeah. All the conversation we're having is what we need to do sooner than later. We can go down.
But you can't reassess those. Just why not? You don't have a viable tool.
Yeah, I would say it's just limited to that. I think we could add some things to that, maybe.
That's what we need to talk
those
about.
Those are fine.
This needs to
you can refine that.
Okay, but well, we're basically on the right track, yes?
Oh, yeah. Just you're not on the right track.
That's in gray. That's.
We'll learn next time.
What's your schedule?
And Lori, can they be moved between units? I assume unit 11's turning vane is not going to be used for a while.
You know, that's actually where we were talking about scavenging VDS pieces.
Yeah.
was 11.
So it was 11 so hour coming back.
Is there a unit 11?
I don't. It's just a whole.
Don't get me started on that one.
It's a skeleton thing.
I heard it was fatally flawed.
It's very much out in the return days.
So C slot?
Consider it a skeleton thing at this point.
11 to me.
Really?
You've got.
Really?
No. I've been banging my head against that one for the past 2 years, and I can't even get a date of when they even think they might even turn it back on.
Yeah.
Or test it to turn it back on.
It's kind of a really big problem that most of them
will use
the DOA.
Yeah.
The plan was to utilize the, at the time that we thought the test was going to happen, I had thought 11 was not coming back online. We were told it was, and so right. Now that it's back on again.
Yeah, it's only lasted about 4 days.
Yeah, the plan was actually to do that. We had hoped we could actually just modify the porosities in the 11 ones and then just dump them in. It's not that simple since to get to the porosity plate, you have to move the wedge wires. So we were thinking of attaching to the backside temporarily. So, but yes, our intent is to use the stuff in 11. Our plan was initially to use the material in 11, placed in 14, to do the testing and then put it back and then put the regular stuff back in 14.
Yeah,
and then we would have no permanent impact on anything. So 11 is still on. Okay.
I was going to ask, I don't think those turning vanes are, they're not a separate component of the STSO. They just can't take them out.
They can be modified.
We would do
the gap is not closed anymore.
No,
correct?
You can tell the gap closure. You can just change how efficient the turning vane is, so it's not putting as much flow up.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
Cut your hand out the window.
So where's the flow going to go?
Heck, it's almost like through the vane that's already there before we changed it.
Exactly.
The gap closure device is still there. Contributes more than the
turning. Back up to the second slide.
Back up.
Okay, so then my question is still there. How do you
go back to the slide?
How do you evaluate?
She's going to show you.
Yeah.
She's not going to tell me how to.
See, the turning vane comes all the way down here.
Okay.
If you cut up off in here, what's going to happen is flow will still go up, but it won't go as much. We will put more flow through here.
We have modeled data. I think we just.
It may not be the right.
This is the thing we fixed. We thought it would be better. It turned out it wasn't.
It's the beam.
It started going backwards.
It's the beam.
The other option is you could increase porosity through there.
Okay, so how do you evaluate it?
Again, what we're doing here is the assumption is, and this is where we are making an assumption and we haven't thought through it also. The thought is we've got too much flow up here. You know that by measuring the velocity going through the VBS because everything else is in there plus a little 14 CFS going into the orifice. So you measure the flow going through normal to that, you will have a measurable difference of the flow going up the gate wall slide.
Okay, so how do you know you fixed the problem?
That's the whole point. We don't know if we fixed the problem. We can tell you if we've changed the hydraulics.
Right. And so in order to fix, to know if you fixed the problem, you've got to do a biological test.
Yes.
Correct. So, and in order to do the biological test, you release fish so that they're guided by the screen into the gate well, like we did in this last year, correct?
I don't know that. That's you tell us.
And I'm just leading you somewhere. And my point is, so now you're decreasing the flow in the gate well, increasing it through the gap. Just a thought. If the screen is killing the fish, then you may not pick it up because those fish then, or you see dead, your dead fish that are now going up into the gate well.
You mean this screen is killing the fish?
Yes. Then then those dead fish may go through the gap instead of up into the gate well like they are now. So now you think, oh, we fixed the problem, but you haven't.
Well, that's one of the questions, though. Why would there be dead fish, say, at the upper end of the 1%? Are you saying you're thinking because at that point there's too much flow going through the screen and you're causing impact at that point?
Yeah, just a hypothesis.
No, I'm just trying to...
We haven't had that problem in the past.
We don't know that.
Had a gap closure device in the past.
Did we ever test at upper
but we've 1%? Run for years, we ran these units at the same level we're running today with standard SPS in place.
We had hydraulic relief.
Well, we
over
didn't
the
have
top.
A high velocity up in the slot.
So you're thinking all this.
Yes, but I'm saying maybe it's always been a problem.
So you're thinking that the gap closures just.
The gap closures are
yes.
Without it, they went this way instead of this way.
If screens have always killed fish, then maybe we just haven't seen it until we put the gap.
All of those dead fish and the MGE studies, that are fighting nets. It had been there. I don't recall that.
You wouldn't see the data in your tag stuff.
No, you would not.
You won't forget that.
Nope.
No, but I'm going back to the old days. The gap closure, we had gap closure nets. We had nets all the way down behind the screens to capture fish that are going past the screens to measure FGE. And most of those fish were dead in the nets, but they weren't all chewed up or beat up or didn't have the...
The fish on the screens in the gatewell aren't all chewed up and, I mean, the picture that she showed.
Well, you would see that. I mean, when fish get stuck against the screen, they get what we call a number 90 scaling. If you look at the F-type scaling criteria, it's a longitudinal lateral line descaling. That's just the direct result of being up against the screen. It's characteristic, it's diagnostic, and we don't see it.
Okay. And the fish that we're seeing in the gate well,
those guys
don't have that.
They don't have that. I mean, these will, but they're plastered against the screen.
Would they have so the same descaling pattern then if they were sunk onto the SPS and then rolled off the
if they rolled off, well, if they fought. Quick? If they don't fight it, they just stick against it. But then if they're doing that, then we're...
Mm-hmm.
I like Scott's idea of pulling screens. I've said it before.
That would resolve a lot of problems.
Sorry, that was a rabbit hole, a rabbit trail. But
I'm done.
Okay.
Is that it?
I think we need a brainstorming session to come up with things we can.
Yeah, I think that's the next step is to get everybody together and talk. Please include us if you're going to do that.
A charrette?
Yeah. What?
A charrette?
A charrette.
That's the new buzzword for brainstorming.
We can talk about it here shortly.
Yeah.
I think so. Yeah,
I don't think
sure.
Sorry.
Yeah. No, when did taking ideas from the French become
charrette? Other allies.
That's a
really
idea.
Oh, I heard that. I heard that about it was about 6 or 8 months ago. I'm like, what is a charrette? Someone said, we've always called it that. Oh, that's
cool. So that will be the black bold item now, the reassessment of alternatives.
Yes, let's do that. Let's have a
discussion. And I'm not officially on the team anymore, but...
Yeah, you better
box. No, it's kind of like the rats jumping off the ship. George runs for the door.
So now that everybody's out of the room, why don't you just go ahead and just load up our PowerPoint, I'll punch through it, and we'll be...
As a resource provider, so I have an interesting... The team is kind of getting re-scoped so that they know they've got the time available to put to this, and one of the first things they're going to do is scope the rest of this work. Get started on the CFD modeling and plan that brainstorming role. So in my role, I'll make sure that gets done and that you guys get included.
We'll invite
John
you.
Will be part of that, Lori will, and so will Lori and Gary.
Part of my goal is to come up with something that we could, without endangering something, test.
Yeah, I think we need to be more bold.
So forgive me for... I'm not real familiar with this project, but would it be of any benefit to spend a little extra time to make this vein adjustable?
No.
That's a good point.
Fresh blood. Someone gag him. You're going to ask a mechanical to weigh in. He's going to want to make it adjustable.
And then you explain why all your mechanicals have said no way in hell.
It's only 30 of them. Well, it's 27. It's 11.
I'm a noob anyway, so. We got is this like a break time? 10-minute break time or something like that?
It's a very small break. I just had the hard realization. We need to tell Mark Lee one more thing to check.
What?
In 11, we pulled screens for like 6-8 weeks. So a big check of his data, if he's going to get turbines or up, it'd be two. He's going to have
two. We provided them the data where we pulled screens.
Okay, good. I didn't see that. I think that's a good point.
No, we
tell me, John, if I can come up with a prototype fish that has fins.
And we flagged that data.
Need a sensor fish.
Sensor fish that reacts to flow change.
Reacts to flow change.
Lateral line, RO fish. Yeah, right.
That's so much better.
Hey Tom, I think it would be worthwhile to send Mark an email and ask him if the numbers included those fish or did not. I'll try to remember to do it too. I'll try to remember to do it, and if you'll try to remember to do it, maybe it'll get sent.
What's the question?
Did the numbers that Mark presented include the fish that passed B2 when the screens were pulled?
But they're going to be assigned as turbine passed fish one way or the other.
Yeah, just you run your analysis separately though to see. I mean, if it turns out the survival is vastly different, which means that's my point.
We did.
Okay, that's because Mark was doing that thing.
I was thinking, well,
who cares? Like, no, I'm just thinking, like,
back to 8. 8 was not until was after the spring.
Exactly.
Was it that late?
Yeah.
8 was a high labor.
And it was only for a couple of weeks, I think.
It was like 2 or 3 weeks, but 11 was like 6 or 8 weeks.
Yeah, the whole damn season. It was.
Yeah. And that's part of the reason why people, well, gee, it doesn't matter. Well, yeah, because 11 took the screens out, so of course you're not going to have any fish in 11. Right. So that's when people always get all excited about. That's what the 3% GPS don't do anything. It's like, well, yeah, when you pull screens out, they're not going to do
that. That's right.
So there's little things like that.
What you got to keep remembering?
So it seems like, even though it doesn't have a biological component to it, you had even just a sphere. Dump them in there.
Probably 2% guidance efficiency, 3% guidance efficiency.
And you guys weren't able to find anything out of those?
Was it 10 or 11?
Good.
1 year it was 4, 1 year it was 6.
Yeah, that's what we
need
to do.
So they were real close.
Well, you mean they're on it now? That's what they're doing. That's what I was like, okay, let's figure out what kind of, you know, is it the sound, is it the dramatic change in pressure somewhere? They're just lucky.
They're taking a break.
Someone did. They had to change crews.
But I remember the proportion going through bypass was pretty similar, even though one had screen.
I know. That was the bizarre thing.
Don't hold really back, John. Is this about us?
Yes.
That's why I started thinking about outdoor girls.
Bottom will probably be the same if they want.
Too many hours in my room with Shanae.
Well, so
you know what?
This
is too late.
Well, we did, we talked about this. They're talking modifications, we're talking minor modifications, finger modifications, all we're talking about.
Who was the road
I was a little surprised.
The biologists, they need to get...
Yeah, I was a little surprised.
People bond shit.
That's right.
That's what we have.
Yes, this is why this project keeps going on and on.
Yes.
This is ridiculous. That's why I called Jerry Carroll before we waste this room. I said, look, I'll bet you didn't know this was happening. He said, no, I didn't. I said, I'd like to have the right people in the room. He said, you'll have.
They have.
And it had to be common for every OEM to get that right. No.
That's totally wrong.
Was I wrong?
I know. We sit here a year ago saying...
I know, it's not you. I'm just...
Oh, yeah. No.
Yeah, there's staff meetings every week out there.
Exactly. People need to talk.
Well,
you can start using the visible announcements. They're all... Cut the flows down.
If you tell me something, and my boss is asked about it, she's not going to give you a quote. I'm talking to her.
What's that?
It may not be a perfect thing, but... Really, what it was?
Have you heard that though?
For a second, and helping those hard spots. I mean, I wouldn't.
Really no, this is maybe that's as of today.
This is as of today.
What?
Yeah,
this.
I mean, I think 12.
It was like one of those something under the
radar. It was less than a foot. And
yeah, I mean, we talked about.
We talked about.
Something from it.
We said we fix up the teeth to engage the rat. And the plan, I went and talked to Jim and Mark.
Yes.
Said, yeah, we can give options drawings.
Take
with their own contract and crew.
Yeah.
For what, a new rig?
Right.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
Yeah. It's not worth the money.
Every rental
it sounds like that's not what they wanted. They said modification. There's some projects that was required. They just had to leave. They gave us no. It'll take a little effort, but it's not anything.
The teeth will fix. There's nothing else that we found that warrants it. It's a lot of money versus no gain. And the fact is,
okay, Tammy's back. We can get
so
going again.
Tell us it works.
Yeah,
get this over with.
Really, it works.
Okay, so
that's why I'm frustrated.
I'm wild for this. There'll be some like guarantees. I want signed in blood. Firstborn children, Rumble Stiltskin time. That's all I'm talking about here.
For what?
I don't care for what.
I'm not sure.
For your arts, for your CCU. We'll just dredge and everything will be peachy kind.
Slow down. We got to
get this. I sent the original letter in 1999.
What did the letter say?
Says fix the problem. This broken debris on the beach was our Baffertur.
You know what your problem was? You know what your problem was? You didn't have us.
Yes. That's exactly where I was going with that.
Yes. We finally got the right team together here.
By the way, that's just one in a long list of problems.
Yeah.
So just
dug it out. You're like the fourth team.
We're gonna.
Fourth time's the charm.
But not
fourth
time's the charm. To eat, all right.
No, this is actually longer. We caused our problem. We finished it in 2004-2007, and there's like a that wasn't some good idea.
It doesn't say anything.
So I guess we got there.
No.
All right, let's go ahead and get through this.
It doesn't say they are or they aren't.
Okay, so we should probably revisit that.
We should. We need to. That's
kind of how we've been operating.
We're good to go.
We're good to go.
All right.
So the show you've all been waiting for.
Yeah.
B2 Trash Rake.
There's three slides.
You guys know Ben Filon and Eric Strickland.
Yeah.
Okay.
Last time. Okay. Good. So we've got a little presentation here for you that essentially just goes over a little background. You guys probably are well aware of it. We're going to talk a little bit about bee study.
Tom's familiar with it, so if you could do it in great detail for him, that would be.
Fedora girl, I know the morning sickness is kicking on hard, but come on now.
I drew a good photo.
And for those of you that don't know, I am not pregnant.
The red haired beaver.
Hey.
Okay.
So we got this is a good idea of what's going on in the gourmet there.
Really messy.
That's kind of packed in these fish kind of packed in. To that corner, right. And we'll say it presents a hydraulically challenging problem as far as debris management. Like that. Next. So we, as a team, we built off of the 2001 DER that was done for these, very similar problem. And this is probably, you know, stems from the 1999 charter. I'm assuming there was a charter or something happened. So,
it's a bitchy letter. You signed it even.
which some things were implemented, some were not. But in this case, we're, you know, this project is going to build off that information, so we're not duplicating things. And essentially, you know, I'm not going to read verbatim, but we've got a set of blocked off racks out there, which was implemented to for sediment abatement per se, debris capture, which has been somewhat successful. The remainder of these items, to my knowledge, log barrier was a function of the trash rake, the automated trash rake that was recommended in this DER, and it wasn't installed. Log barrier wasn't installed. However, there was a rake built, fabricated, a manual rake fabricated. I'm not sure. I don't think transducers were installed out at the AMB diffuser gates, or maybe if they were, they're tried out, and we could get a bunch of much information on that. So, okay, go ahead. There was an operations plan along with this DER. This is verbatim out of the DER, and mostly had to do with the orifice gates. But what we'd like to highlight is the annual soundings immediately upstream of the fish unit intakes and dredge during the in-stream work period. Next. So as you can see, I got a couple of the items that are that we've implemented, but the feedback is important. Feedback from the operations, So they like the idea of having a bin down at the bottom of the racks to essentially capture this debris. And the problem is, and this is why dredging is so important, is it's an indeterminate process. We know that there's a large amount of sediment, and I don't want to make this a sediment issue because really this is a debris issue, but it does have an impact on how the debris accumulates on the racks. When you have a high sediment load, that debris has a tendency to come up and attach itself to the racks, regardless of how often you bring it. So what we'd like to do, or what we're proposing in this, is this regular dredging just out in front of the units to keep this bin down low enough so that the rake material doesn't come back up onto the racks.
Define regular.
Yeah. Regular. Well, so that's what that's where the hydro survey soundings come into play on an annual basis. It may not be regular. It may be biannual with the standard work period on the ladder. But we need to make sure that we have a bin there for material to accumulate, so that so that operations can successfully manage the debris on the racks from a standpoint of O&M.
So when are we going to pound on this one? No, yeah. Scott, because you want to take first shot?
Well, did you say there's a bin for debris?
There's a lower part of the lower screen is blocked off.
Yeah.
So that makes it a lifehole.
I thought you
were
maybe putting a box in front of
it. No, it creates kind of a debris bin.
Right, but is it possible? The problem we have is it took probably 10 years to get the last dredging done. So doing it annually is never going to fly.
So that actually is now a routine operation that will be in our budget.
Yeah. Dredge every year. And this is where my Rumpelstiltskin comment comes
every
in.
Every 4 years.
I'm going to want a firstborn to get.
You're not going to get it. The fact is, we're in declining budgets.
That's my
point. The O&M is required. You're looking for a silver bullet to take care of this problem, and it's not going to happen. The fact is, the rake is effective enough to get the debris off. That's been identified. The dredging is the single biggest thing to keep it there.
Exactly.
The plans are in place. The things you can do to help.
instead of asking for the first warning, is help us get the money to do this routine work.
Actually,
people are seeing the importance of it.
No, we have. And the problem is the core...
The core?
Unfortunately, management has not been able to get the funds they need. And we can only push so much on our side. And for the fact that we're now going to have to depend upon the core to have the funds to do the dredging, that's Sam, you say you got it.
Well, it comes to that, we can't push at all for funds. All we can do is say this is what we need.
But if we want to go from a maintenance standpoint.
That we got it put into the fish passage plan, and there was a reason for that, because once it's in there, then that's what we can get to the project and say, look, you are required to do this. You need to make sure that you prioritize your fish funds and get this dredging done. And if you don't have enough, then you have to get it first. It's the same for all of the maintenance that we do out there. We can't guarantee that even diffusers could be maintained or the ladders could be watered.
That's my point. That's why I'm loath to come back to operational maintenance as the one thing that's going to keep this thing operating.
Then what would you like to see? What do you have in mind?
A brainstorming session, that would have been awesome to have about a year ago.
We had it in November, in December.
That was internal. That wasn't with us. So we weren't invited to that. We didn't even know.
Give us your expertise. After working on this for 10 years, tell me, what do you think should be done?
Well, that was what we were hoping for.
I'm asking you.
I'll tell you what I think should be done. That's to dredge the damn thing.
Yes.
3-1 or 2 years.
Yes.
Make sure you do it.
Yes.
And use whatever rake you have out there. Make sure it works to drive it down or what.
That's what we're proposing.
That's what we're
getting
at.
But you want to pound on it? Go ahead. Keep pounding on it.
My point is, if I get guarantees this, awesome.
I can't give you a guarantee.
Well, then you're back to the same problem. We're telling you what the solution is.
We know the solution.
Let me finish here for half a moment, because I understand. I mean, you're more excited than I was 10 years ago, which is awesome. But my point being is, we knew dredging would solve the problem. And we pushed, and the course is, gosh, we don't have any funds to dredge. And it took us, 10 years to get this last dredging done? And I'm just concerned that if we're going to say this is our method for solving the problem, we're going to be dependent upon the Corps to have funds to do this or somehow prioritize it properly and that kind of stuff. But if something else breaks, they're going to say, gosh, we don't have the funds this year because this is more important than dredging, because it's dredged, it's a little problematic, but fine, we'll let it sit for another year. And that is going to keep happening, keep rolling until we get to a spot where we're, this last year, where it's like, oh my God, this thing is so overflow, we're having 10-foot differentials, we're going to lose damn trash rate.
As somebody that came into this program a year ago, what I'm curious about is why the project took on it turned into something that we needed a new rake, is what I was told when I got the project. And the whole idea behind this product, the project development team, was to design a new rake system. So I thought, okay, great. We go out and try to do that. We look for something that's in existence with this long reach, et cetera, and there's nothing there. So what we're finding is we could spend $2-4 million for something that would maybe give us 1-2% improvement over what we've got right now. And then come to find out, everybody already knew that the rake kind of worked, and we just needed to keep up with the maintenance. So why would this group and every other group let this project go on for 10 years knowing what the answer is, but hoping for some silver bullet and a magic automated rake that turns out doesn't exist yet?
That was one alternative. The big alternative was do we need to go and look in the forebay to make, it would be expensive, but to make a change in how debris enters this area?
We looked at that, and that was briefed the last time we talked that we were looking at that. And we went through it, and it turns out we were hopeful that the curtain wall would work, and it turns out it doesn't.
Well, the thing is, we've seen none of this. I have not seen
any of this.
To get excited me for saying, what's RHP? But I haven't seen what you guys have produced. I mean, this is the. Yeah. I mean, I heard an SET meeting a month ago saying, gosh, our trash rake's acceptable. We'll just dredge debris, and everything's peachy keen. And I said, well, what about if we have to change the trash rake size for Lambert? And they said, oh, we don't have to do that either. So this is all brand new information.
That's what we're going to walk you through right now.
Yeah, and it would have been nice to have a report ahead of time so I could read it, so I could come up with some like.
I know
that we have to apologize for, but we've had issues in getting that thing completed. But at the end of the day, in a nutshell, what we just talked about is what's going to be recommended.
Well, that's what we understand.
Can we guarantee the funding? No.
Well, no.
I think what we need to do. I mean, what we will do is make sure this is in the fish passage plan as an annual or biannual maintenance item. That plan is part of the biological opinion. If you can't do that, you're not complying with the biological opinion. That's number one.
So there are some
downsides to that. We can bear pressure on that if we need to. I don't think we need to, but I mean that's how you
make it part of what has to be done in order to meet the biological opinion.
And Gary, that's why we put it into the FPP this past year, because then when we do our budgets, we can put that in the justification.
Has to be done. And if you can't do it, then you know, then we have to talk.
And it's the permitting that was the problem as far as getting the permits to do dredging.
But Lonnie is also funded.
But if it's and funding, but if you call it routine maintenance, mm-hmm. because it is, mm-hmm. then that takes the permitting part out of it.
That goes away.
You don't have to do an EIS yes. and then and everything
right.
else.
Right. Okay. Good.
Okay. So back to this. So I spoke earlier about a new rig in the boneyard. You've probably seen it. It's not essentially. Let me just boil this down. It's not worth
his yard.
Out of the yard.
The team's determined it's not be too expensive to modify at this point in time. Mm-hmm. Especially when the project has already said that the existing rig, they prefer to use that existing rig, and it doesn't, you know, trip the limits essentially when they go to use it. So perhaps sometime in the future. Way in the future, maybe there's another project that might be able to address it, but at this point we're not going to do anything with it.
You mean the other rig? The old one?
The new one.
The one that's in the boneyard.
It's going to get confusing, but the one that was just recently. Yeah.
The one that's in the boneyard.
Yeah, wait a few next down. Slide. Go ahead and the next slide here. And it's, with our project, I mean, we sort of already talking about this a little bit, but essentially our goals meet lamprey requirements, meet salmon passage requirements, reduce wear and tear on the units, you know, and evaluate if a smaller rack size or existing rack size will work with a 3/4 inch proposed diffuser grading changes. Currently they float the rack, they're supposed to float when it reaches a 1 foot differential. That may or may not be the case. The racks are expected clean and clean once every 4 years according to the project. I'll address that later on. We made some changes there, hopefully that'll help. And the hydro survey is basically when we get ready to dredge, we've got to do one. So that's what it boils down to. What we're saying is we've got to do that on a regular basis. So
cheaper. Performed every summer during the Washington Shore ROV inspection of the diffuser grading at the same time.
Okay. No, that's not how it's written in the FPP, and there was a reason for that. Because you don't want the corner collector closed when you have your ROV inspection. And that was the argument at the time, was that they would have to start closing and stuff and shut down.
Close the corner collector on the other side?
That's yet to be determined.
Yeah.
You know, you guys can work on that.
We feel like the optimum time.
The hydro survey boat in the forebay, get it done, prepare for the next winter maintenance period.
And that's how it's written, is with enough time to prepare for the winter maintenance period.
So are you guys going to have some sort of performance criteria if you have to start floating debris more than, say, 3 hours next? I mean, because long term, there was a talk about trying to go to reduce flow through the adult fish units to reduce flow of the adult ladder to aid lamprey passage. Now, if we're having to shut off the units, that's not going to work for that. And that's part of the 10-year lamprey plan to evaluate that. Now, is there going to be some sort of performance criteria that, I mean, 3 hours, lamprey guys probably won't be happy with it, but they could probably live with a 3-hour flow. But if that starts expanding to all night.
No, they're not happy with that.
They're not.
They're not happy with the current.
Oh, I know. Honestly, yeah. And that's part of the performance criteria. If you guys are having to float debris every night for some length of time,
that's what we're trying to avoid.
I would say what you have is currently not working.
Yes,
and that's what our project is to not have to shut off the fish units because of debris.
Yes,
and so what we found were the rake wasn't being utilized hardly at all, and I think that people got used to floating debris. Honestly,
it's easy.
Yeah, it is. And so what we're saying is we can't give you a new toy to make it better. You're just going to have to do what you're supposed to do.
So, okay, let's go ahead. Here's a little, basically, hydro survey before and after. I mean, if you can take a real good look at that. That's a lot of debris coming in.
That's huge.
Yardage.
I've got a few numbers there. It sounds like everybody's privy to this information. Been on the project for a while, so but quite a bit of material coming in on a regular basis. So you know, once every 2 years, or once, you know, depending on flows, we might have a high flow year.
It might come in all at once.
We still got a lot of debris coming down too.
Yeah.
And when was the dredging done?
2013.
This last
January waterwork. So this is actually came out of this project as well. This dredging is something we requested. So so VE study, kind of a sensitive subject, but essentially last time we talked, everybody here asked the question, how did you evaluate the alternatives? This is, I could put up the modifiers, but at least we can look at this, and you know, this is what we evaluated each alternative with a certain modifier. Obviously, the fish friendly and maintainability, reliability at high multipliers, and maybe supply power had a lower multiplier. So we rated, you know, as a team, we rated these based on the desirability, and then each alternative received a secondary rating, if you will, or a 1 to 5 kind of thing. From, you know, everybody voted. We hashed it out. We didn't know what the multiplier was going to be. That was part of the VE study. And as a result, in the alternative studies, this four-bay feature came out the highest score. Low maintenance, you know, successfully diverting debris into Unit 18, possibly, so on and so forth. Might be very expensive, but we'll look at it. Our hydraulics, Lori actually came up with an idea of using maybe flexi flows. You don't have to build a big wall. We can just try to divert the flow. And that's where we broke off into a CFD study. We thought that, okay, well, this might work. This has some merit. Yeah, we can't build a 120-foot wall made of piles out in front of the four bay. I mean, you know, it's $150 million project problem. Who knows? But this might work. So we proceeded down that path, and it was something that Lori endorsed. She said, well, you know, let's try it. And unfortunately, the modeling showed that in a lot of different cases, and we'll get to the cases, but a lot of different cases, it was unsuccessful, only because of the unique bathymetry of the forebay. And you're probably all aware of the swirl, right? But I mean, that is a significant feature hydraulically in that area, and very challenging. And especially in that corner where the fishing boats are at, and debris will have a tendency to accumulate. We're stuck. So with this wall, anything in the forebay for diversion purposes will increase velocities, and it's likely that we'll increase debris loads on the fish units because of that. I'm not hydraulics, but you'll see it in the graphics. This still in the VE study, semi-automatic trash rating system. This is a cut right from 2001. This was the only system that even had a chance doing what we thought it could do. As it turns out, the company could not come up with any good examples, successful examples of a rig that worked at the depths and the rack spacing that we wanted. And as a team, we thought this would, you know, the high implementation risk. We could not find any good examples. We didn't have any in the district. There wasn't a lot of evidence to speak to its reliability and maintenance and implementation, whether or not successful. It's a great idea, but
this is run by a crane.
This actually here is this is a structure that's installed on the deck, and then this is a rail coming out of this crane. And this is a self-contained hoisting unit with the rake head here on the bottom. And then it's essentially set up so that the rack and the rake engage at some point down below the water, or above the water. And PLC driven, it's a big system. Would have been a reasonable solution. But again, we don't have any good, we're putting something multi-million-dollar piece of equipment on the deck, and we don't have a good idea of how it's going to perform.
You realize we've done that before. Well,
it's kind of what we do, isn't it?
It's kind of what we do.
So what's the problem?
We didn't see that.
What?
We couldn't justify the benefits. So at least not having the information that we discussed earlier regarding the actual performance of the rake on site. And that's something, again, Eric talked about this, but going into this study, we thought that it was absolutely horribly performing and it didn't work and there was no way to do it otherwise, and there would just be tons of debris every single day. And that's what we got going in, and as we flew further, found out more information and got a little bit more feedback from the people that were using it. And it sounds like at least it's effective from the standpoint of riggers on the deck utilizing the equipment. It works properly. And of course, that third bullet, that was kind of a big one. Operations was pretty adamant about not having the automated rig. And as it turns out, they also didn't want an automated rig. They wanted a semi-automated rig. That's why I put a semi up there, which means you got to have an operator or two to visually assert that it is working like it's supposed to be, during operation, which sort of defeats the purpose. But go ahead. So here we go. There's the new rake in the boneyard. And the old rake that has it stands out there on the deck. This is the third alternative that ranked highest, third down in progression. At this point in the BE study, we weren't sure if we were going to modify the racks and the rake. So this part of the BE study, which is way back, We thought that we might have to modify the racks and the rake, so either or. We could look at either or and attempt to essentially fabricate new racks, match the rake up, and be successful in that. The new rake, we kicked that one to the side because, again, there are too many issues with the aux hoist, upper limit trips, and the weight. It would have been design intensive to try to modify the new rake. The old rake, because the project has told us that it works, functions well, we thought, well, okay, we can deal with that. We can make some small modifications to it. As it turns out, other projects, and this information probably hasn't been fully disseminated yet, but close bar spacing on the racks, we're talking 5/8 inch. They've been recently installed at John Day, or at least attempted to install it. There is some constructability, and I would contend serious constructability issues with them. Could potentially be serious with bar spacing. And essentially what they have to do is they have to stack the bars in order to weld them to the frame. And that means you only get one weld, one fillet or one bevel, if you're familiar with that, but essentially one weld one side, and then you put the next bar next to it, one weld one side. Well, you can fabricate it initially, but if a log hits it or something happens to it and you try to go to repair it, it's very, very difficult for operations personnel. And actually the operations personnel conveyed to the team that even with this spacing currently, it's difficult to repair the bars when they do get hit with something or something happens to them. So that was another, these issues sort of stacked up and pushed the team in a direction of you know, what's wrong with the existing racks? Do we really know that the debris will the debris loading on the diffusers is going to be lessened by a smaller space? And by observation, you could probably say yes, right? But in this case, the team's position is that we're dealing with debris load, debris that is so small, for instance, grasses, that it's not going to matter whether it's 5/8 or 7/8. If you have a stick or something like that, that's just going to, that could either go across or that could go straight on through. And if it won't matter if it's 5/8, you're going to get 5/8-inch stick through and twisted underneath your diffusers. So and it was a lot of money. We're talking an outlay of more than $1 million just to replace the racks. And after learning with the about the constructability issues, I'm sure that number is going to go up. But the team decided to move forward with the existing racks and assert that we should look at the racks in the future when the diffuser gratings have been replaced with the 3/4-inch open space.
So does it need any work, the current, the old grid?
Say again.
Does it need O&M funding to maintain it? Is it broken? Is it
the rake?
Yeah.
No. It functions just fine. We did an ROV inspection. This portion opens and closes and engages the rack. Well, I wouldn't say it engages it well, but it does follow the guides, and it is able to pick debris on the downward stroke. So the teeth, this rake's got some spring-loaded teeth. I don't know how familiar everybody's with this rake. You've seen it before. But they sit out perpendicular to this back plate surface, and they have a spring on either side, so they'll rotate about a shaft. And as the rake's coming down like this, as the teeth hit a cross member or something, they're able to sort of fold up and not damage things, right? They are in disrepair, significantly damaged, bent, broken, so on and so forth. That would be what we would propose as a team, which is probably a minor repair. Repair those teeth, put a little design work into the springs, put a little design work in the teeth, and get it so that those teeth will actually ride close to the top surface of the rack, all right, but not in between the actual bars.
Everything you're describing, though, is switches from a CRFM-funded project to an O&M-funded project. That's
probably.
I think the case can be made to go either way.
Yeah.
Good luck on the O&M.
You guys, well, the O&M.
Well, okay, so
the O&M doesn't have the funds. That's the problem. CRFM has funds, but this is really a O&M issue. You're replacing
that. That's part of the reason. If you can say you're making a new rake, you can put under CRFM. If you say you're just modifying or replacing the old rig. Now, if you could say the old rig was deficient in its original design, then you might have a shot.
Well, I think that's what we would say with
if
the teeth.
If you say that,
the original teeth are deficient.
So you can tell the shaft that it's on is bent, physically bent, which to me means the design was not
sufficient. It wasn't quite up to snuff.
It wasn't robust enough. Okay, so I guess let's keep going. Okay, so our top alternative, this leads into the CFD. This diversion wall concept, going back to it, is essentially consists of flexi floats with a draft of 10 to 40 feet. And we modeled that as let's just keep going anyway. So we evaluated it based on, had minimal biological impacts, positive, some of the stuff I've already talked about. Under the VE criteria, low maintenance, so on and so forth. But and we assumed that the debris would get diverted through 18, which we thought would be a benefit for everybody in a lot of ways. We farmed it out to PNNL, that's probably fair to some of those guys, and they used Star City, so GCM, go ahead. Here's the mesh. This shows survey data attached to that CFD analysis. Most recently, the 2003 dredging we did, we were able to incorporate that into this analysis. So that's kind of what this does. Here's a nice bathymetric elevation view with the units fishing over here. Here's our CFE analysis. These are the configurations. So existing wall one, here's a 10-foot wall, 10-foot wall and berm, 40-foot wall. And this is a wall that Lori wanted to try after some not so good results with the early on modeling runs. We tried this one too, and it was unsuccessful. Well, these two actually. So this one's labeled sluiceway. This was a concept where this little dot right here, this is the AFF entrance, the water for water supply. We're going to try to pull surface debris using that. That's kind of a mock corner collector, right?
Like let's do it.
As it turns out,
it didn't work.
And I believe it was approximately 50. CFS, we'd have to wait for you, the report, the CFD full reports in project wise right now. If you want to look at it, I can send out a link.
They don't have access to project.
Okay. We can funnel it, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Here's these are the results from 10-foot wall, 4-foot wall, as you can see. So these are seeds coming in, simulating debris. Here's our corner area. This is the wall and berm. As you can see, the seeds are what we've always seen out there is curling. This shows the 40-foot wall. Better at stopping the curl, but the debris is coming down and underneath that wall. It's just, we're just increasing velocity there.
The configuration of the board bay is such that those units are just sucking water through. Yeah. They're starving.
Yeah.
Next.
Yes. And then so this is the tapered wall, and it's unsuccessful as well. And here's our sluice way. Still developing the curl. We're not seeing any debris pulling out of that.
What you call seeds or your particles, are they neutrally buoyant or are they sub-neutrally buoyant?
I would assume they are neutrally. That's a good question. I don't know off the top of my head. That'd probably be a Lori question.
Yeah.
It might be in the report, but I would assume that
it's all the way through the water column.
Yeah. Okay. They placed them. This doesn't show them in the report, but they placed them in elevation. They placed them at like 70, 50, 30, and looked at the seeds as a group. But you'll see it. I didn't want to flutter the PowerPoint.
Okay.
Well,
that's fine. That's
fine. So essentially, what I've talked about, this suggests. The CFD, and I know you guys have a little bit of faith in it, suggests heavily that that this would be an unsuccessful project.
Oh, I agree with you.
And basically the conclusion stated that it would be unsuccessful unless we did some modeling with the or made some changes to the bathymetry of the forebay.
I think if you went for a bathymetrical approach, you might be able to get something.
We're talking,
ridiculous things,
right?
So,
and that's exactly the conclusion the team came to. you know, we can't do it. We wanted to, but it just, it's not panning out. So I wanted to talk a little bit about the next highest ranking alternative was the semi-automatic rig. But of course, project didn't want it. Somewhat experimental. We didn't have proven design. That picked that one off too. So our next one, then we finally ended, we landed on the manual rig and rack system. And then we, you know, like I said, we asked the question, do we really know that those racks are going to preclude debris that we want, or is it just going to include, or is it just going to increase maintenance on the front side? So then the project, obviously, they were adamant about keeping the racks the way they were. They liked it.
The racks, you're talking about
the intake racks.
If we go to 3/4 diffusers for lamp and ladder, you need to change the racks on the upstream side.
That's kind of another question down the road.
So that's what we.
But that's the thing is, if you don't change them, then what you've got right now is fine. But right. If you do change them, that's gonna.
I guess that would resolve this issue first. Don't worry about that one down the road.
And that was the approach we took. Yeah, we weren't tasked to look at the diffusers in that way. But anything we did do, we wanted to check it.
Right. Which is all we did. Everything works.
As long as your digital recorder is still going, you're fine.
So this is the recommendations, like I talked about. We're talking, we want, just like we just discussed, we want to look at the racks again, not we as our this team, but the team that works on the diffusers needs to look at the racks as well. And our position is to put the diffusers in first and see if there's a marked difference in debris collection on the diffusers. Or this team should look at alternate ways to clean the diffusers.
My only concern with that approach is that it is fish risky. And we're right now, or at least yesterday, we had the Cascade Island ladder down to fix up a broken diffuser blowing off grating. Actually, it was a hatch, but we've had these problems in the past where the diffusers have gotten blown off, and if fish get in the diffuser pits, they're done for. So it is very dangerous from a fish standpoint. We would not want to take a risk. I would not want to go down the path of wait for something to break and then we'll fix it.
Oh, it's not wait.
I don't want to go that way.
No, we're definitely not saying monitoring. We're saying monitor. It needs to be monitored. We're already doing ROV inspections. But the team would have
to
look at that.
So you would monitor the diffusers themselves, exactly. Make sure they're not getting plugged up or something broke.
Prior to that,
that's good.
We need to see if doing the maintenance dredging and raking the racks regularly and punching debris out every winter maintenance period because it builds up in the clear spacing, if that's going to be enough to maintain that system. You're never going to get around the O&M on this. And if you can maintain that system and rake it effectively with your existing equipment, then you're probably not going to blow your rack, your diffuser gratings. Because you're talking 7/8 inch.
I think we're talking two different things. I agree with you in keeping and maintaining the system as it is with a rake and the clamshelling, the dredging. That approach, I think, works with new rake or newly fixed rake for the 1-inch spacings. If we go to 3/4 inch spacings on the diffuser, then you've got a mismatch. And I'm not sure.
But the question is it a mismatch? You know, intuitively, we've always thought it's smarter to go smaller if you can.
Yeah, I mean, if
on your trash rack, go to 5/8 inch.
We're the same.
We're the same.
Yeah.
So we're talking the difference between 3/4 in the existing is 7/8.
I know. Yeah.
So you know, John Day, for example,
well,
they
3/4 wouldn't be exactly 3/4 either.
No, they're 5/8.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, but the 3/4 inch diffuser would be matched with Bonneville's 7/8 inch clear space trash rack.
Right.
John Day Dam, they went to 5/8 inch.
Right.
You know, it's in a different location in the downstream end of the nav lock, lateral flow.
Right.
this is a hydraulically challenging environment, given the problems with, you know, that Ben laid out with debris impacts and maintaining racks of that size. You need to see if you can, if your existing system, if you can maintain it. At what risk, you know, are you really putting yourself at if you go to 3/4 inch grading?
If you blow diffusers off, if you take that approach, I'm okay with that, but don't blow any diffusers off.
Well, no. Well, of course we don't want to do that. And we already do it, but, you know, that dredging component, you know, this was figured out way back in 2001. They needed to maintain their dredging.
And so
a different issue.
So we're not suggesting that you just wait and see. We're suggesting that the team that comes in to deal with the diffusers, because you will have to have a team to do this. You can't just replace it like kind. It's got to be a full team effort. So that team needs to be aware, which is part of what this project is all about, be aware of these conditional issues and monitor the diffusers. And then as need arises...
I think we're talking about something that we need to talk about this way. Yeah. I think you're right. I think we should just... What we need to resolve is the issue with the racks we have, the cleaner that we have, and the dredging that we need. What I think would be really important and smart is to build the rake with a replaceable parts that if you went to a smaller spacing, you pulled out, changed out that bar, that rotator and teeth, and popped in your other one, bolted on, and off you go for that smaller size, if you ever needed to go there, which you may not. But if you did need to go there, you at least make it so it's fairly easy to change out from a size standpoint. Throw that to the mechanicals to see if you can come up with something along those lines.
And again, that's a minor modification to the rake, I think. I think we can handle that in-house. I don't know how it's going to be funded, but... You know, at some point, I mean, we understand it's probably O&M monies could be justified as CRFM. We'll work that out.
I think I would design it that way from the get-go. If you're going to go with CRM funding and this is your new rake, I would just design it so that you have the
opportunity. We're trying to give you the path to guarantee CRM funding. Yeah. We're trying to work with you here. Like, you need to have
a new rake.
We know if I'd use the word guarantee and CRFM funding in the same
way. Well, we've got this handled. Anyway, we're going to perform my that's just one of our recommendations. Like we talked about earlier, ROV inspections. Clean the racks. They only do it once a year now, or once every 4 years, excuse me. Should be done once every year. Once a year. We've got project buy off on that. I'm not sure that we have full. Was that the pound of flesh that you requested or first?
Born, I think. But, it was either way. Maybe it's 10
anyway, we've got them to buy off on the raking, buy off on the once a year cleaning. Tentatively, this is what we discussed with them.
Well, and that will be in the fish passage plan. That will be in there, so that if you can do it, it requires coordination, it gets to be a big deal, and everybody gets involved. So
we've also asked them to start documenting the differential across the racks before, not just after, but before and after, put it in a log, and that's so that log is getting started. I think that probably should have been done, but that log is being, I wouldn't say this day further, but in the future, you should be able to refer to that for future projects. We're saying that the raking should occur more frequently on a regular basis. It's maintenance, like we've all discussed in this forum, maintenance. It's not a direct relationship. Debris accumulation is not a direct relationship. You know, it will start accumulating faster as more debris is on there. So that just makes sense to do it that way. The minor modifications that we spoke about would address the grasses, the matted grasses that have a tendency to accumulate. But right now, it was apparent that those grasses were not being taken care of. So then we have our survey information, maintenance, dredging, and then we threw in exercise B diffusers for sediment abatement, we'll say. Not really in our purview, but something that we know sediment accumulation in a diffuser is an issue. And
it has been.
And that if we do a operational
just to flush it.
Flush it, you know, about 30 minutes. Actually, that was John's idea, I believe. So
where did it go to?
It's a good question.
What?
Probably. If you flush it now, does it end up in a place where they have to? They're complaining about
bucking
out all that stuff already now.
But is it better to deal with
it? No, the BU diffuser chimneys on the south monolith, right, where they've had to go in and vacuum them out. You know, they're high tailwater, certain ones that don't operate, and the debris just accumulates in there. If you can see that coming. Just open them, you know, once a week or whatever.
That flushes it out through the channel?
Yeah, it'll go right into the fish ladder and out. Exercise it, keep it moving.
Yeah.
That was a great plan. One needs to write the operating plan for, like, you have new crews that don't know what they're supposed to be doing.
Well, see, this is part of why I got so frustrated. I come in, being new to this, and spending a year with it, and I'm amazed we don't have better records of what's been happening. We talk about the head measurements. We don't have records of when things were operated, when things were floated. We had to go mine this stuff, and it shouldn't be that way. And so that's why you see things like exercise B diffuser. Yeah, it's a little outside our purview, but this is the first opportunity to document it. So in 10 years, when there's another group sitting around this table saying, has this been thought of, there's fuel to feed that. And we do need another plan. And so that you guys can go back and say, Corey, you're not doing what you're supposed to. And that's what this is for. At the end of the day, what we have works with a few tweaks.
And ultimately, this is probably going to be the biggest bang for our buck, bar none. So, I mean, that's what this we need to do. This combination, essentially.
Exactly. It works for the project.
Yeah. You know, we could definitely, like, to meet the point, like, we spend a bunch of money on this rig or what have you, it's likely not going to get spent maybe in places that need it.
How much was the boneyard?
Well, I haven't been able to
drag
that up.
1.5.
What?
That's all.
I would have thought it was more.
I had thought it was way less than that, but
it's 1.5 back in.
That was the
four.
That's the Dennis Schwartz special.
Yeah.
The manual rate. Well, it was okay. So this is the information we have in the 2001 DDR. It was 1.7 for the automated rate and routes. That was for the automated, but for the manual, and I'm assuming that based on the traffic that I saw and some of the emails, that it was sort of V'd out. And I don't want to say it's a VE casualty, but the one that's in the boneyard was an alternate too. And that one, if that costs 1.5.
Well, the project costs 1.5. How much that? Just that piece? Because the whole program.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Design and everything else.
Okay.
Schwartz's labor was one. The rest was them.
So next steps for us.
Well, so
we need to direct. We're going to get the VE report completed. Yeah, that's been an issue internally. The bigger piece at this point, because we're finally exercising some of those options in there, is to get the DDR design documentation report, the 90% done. At that point, we want to get it out to you guys and get it out to our own internal review.
What's your schedule for the VE?
The VE, I'm hoping sometime next week to have a document.
Within the month, then?
Yes. Okay. Probably better for me to say that.
Do you recommend scrapping the new one and putting it sending it away? Because that's always been never clean things up.
It's a good point. It's something that we didn't talk about. You know, the project, it was basically based on project feedback. The guys out there looked at everything and said, you know, they didn't. We'll ask that question, but. You're probably right. We need to try to scrap it.
At the end of the day, I want to leave that up to the operations.
Yeah, that's kind of.
They won't have any money to do it. So, I mean, if you can.
Well, the salvage value on steel, I don't know what it is now, but
yeah,
I mean, you can get quite a bit of money out of it.
But we get those and all that stuff. But we tried it in the program to make sure we cleaned up the work. I mean, the J blocks went away. So we try to not just leave boneyards.
You know, if it's an O&M cost, let's just leave it sitting there as a snarling nesting habitat.
And we could charge people to go out and take pictures of the starlings.
Hey, it's got the Lawrence Memorial rake plaque on it. We might want to need it for that.
So hopefully this is a good plan. I think everybody's in agreement.
Yeah, we're good. We'll need to get the fishers. We'll need to get the DDR. Look through your modifications to the rake. It sounds good. We got to make sure that we get the fish passage plan modified. You need to lay out the items need to go into there, and then they need to be put in, Tammy. I think we're good to go. And then from there on, it's
do your jobs.
What do you think works?
My whole point was just like get it to the point where you don't have to float debris.
Right.
That's the thing. If we can do what we currently got out there, great. I have no problems with that. I'm just saying we have time and again come up against the O&M issue. Because, I mean, like Bonneville's president, stuff breaks Bonneville a lot. I mean, look how much money we've had to pour in the past couple of years. And that's what I'm afraid is like Bonneville keeps getting older, we keep breaking things, going, crap. We have to dip into our funds, we have no funds left over for debris.
I think that's okay. Tom, I'm okay with this. And if we break the budget here, then I want to break it. I'm sick of this.
I am too.
I'm sick of the not having the money. I've been writing in O&M funding and biops, getting them jerked out since 1995. And I'm going to, if it's going to collapse into that, then somebody's going to have to pay attention and we're going to have to get things fixed. It's failing infrastructure. So I think this is the right approach. So this is the only way I think it's going to get done. I don't think there's going to be let's hold the ball either. So.
No.
You know, some magical rake is not going to come out of it.
Well, I didn't think the rake was going to offset the rake.
I know. I think this is, and what I like about this is that we are modifying the rake they have. Project likes to use it, sort of, but hopefully they'll like to use it better.
Well, they're all young now, so they'll use it until they get old.
Yeah,
they won't want to use it.
Oh, I need automated! No, it needs to be maintained.
Want this. Yes.
And so. Then, because we want to get away from floating debris on stuff.
How do we know what the price of the
running those units on the down and down? I think this is a good approach.
How do we know?
Well we have, honestly.
We have to,
honestly,
CRFM, we have to cut aside a certain amount of money to let it loose if we have too much in our placeholder or...
You mean CRFM in the O&M? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I'm saying they're going to try to skirt the game and stay in CRFM to make
right.
Is my guess.
Yes.
And to do that, we need to know what the placeholder number is because our CRFM works.
It's a ballpark.
Yeah.
Well, right now, I think Mike's got, 2.3 or something in there.
So it's
going
way,
forward.
It's way too much, isn't it?
Yeah.
If you're going to replace teeth, it shouldn't be in the tens of thousands. I know you're making it into the millions.
Oh, yeah. We'll work it out. No.
But right now, you're holding too much size.
And I brought this up to Mike just the other day. We're going to adjust those numbers because next year we've only got money for design. And actually, I think we might be able to get away with what we got in there.
I only worry about
it. Cut 15 loose.
I only worry about it when you have too little in there. You can't get that.
No.
I'm not worried about it if they have too much in
there yet.
Where are we going to use too much and see
what happens anyway? So back to one of the debris issues. The debris one of the debris photos. Go back to the early one when I say the hydra.
Oh, at the beginning?
Yeah. So, do we have any, did you see, when you were doing hydro surveys, how often? It's supposed to be every couple of years, they weren't. So I was just wondering, did you know how much of this came in, say, in 11 and 12?
Mm-hmm. How much as far as the survey cost goes?
I was thinking from condit to condit flow and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, 11 flows.
Oh,
can you check with Jake to see when we have the surveys?
Because I'm wondering,
this survey is 2013.
He wants to know.
Did you do like a time?
12, 11, 10, 9.
Did you like a time lapse survey and say, like, okay, not only that, so, much bull crap, and then it just stopped?
Yeah.
There is, in 2001 DDR, there was some dredging lines. That's why I listed this. Really, we're probably looking at 2004, maybe have it. That's the only data that's missing. The other two lines are plotted on a plate in the 2001 DDR, basically, section of the powerhouse, and then you have your basically 97 line and 90.
So those were done prior to the dredging. These
yes.
dredging events.
Yeah, these not those 90. So they were tracked in the 2001, 97. Those two events were tracked in the 2001 DDR. And in the 2004 DDR, or not DDR, but a dredging event. I don't know. I got this from information from email traffic, essentially. I know where the actual source documents are located.
How'd you come up with a 4-year cycle?
Four-year cycle on
you need to dredge. It wasn't California, I think it's...
No, we're
Well, it looks, I mean, in February of 97, they removed almost 3,000 cubic yards.
Well, that was, yeah, you know, that tells the story in itself.
That's a high
that was a big ass flow year.
What, 6-7 months later?
Yeah. You dredged even more.
Same year.
Because that was that same huge flow year.
So it's a function of our flow, right?
Yeah, and
we know that.
Things like conduit where you dump a whole lot of stuff in the river, it's going to work its way down the bottom.
But if you do your surveys on a regular basis, maybe we can get away with biannual.
There may be some years, yeah.
But in 7 years, you only got another 2,000?
Wait, but how many yards do they need before you have a problem?
Or was the effort different? Or they just, you know, did a half-assed
job?
They're
actually saying,
you only can tell by...
I don't have exact numbers.
6,000
was probably closer to 8,000.
Well, even then, I mean, that's 9 years. But, you know, from 97 to 2004, they only then removed 2,000?
Well, and that's the problem. You know, they're letting it build up to the racks. They can't do that.
You say from 97 to 2004, because at 97, you should have been basically zero. So in 97 to 2004, you only had 2,000 cubic yards accumulated in there.
Or that's all they took.
That's all they
moved.
That 2004, that's the year STS Lumber did it. And they probably didn't get it good enough.
Yeah, we only had limited funding for that.
So you guys just got as much as you could for 2,000. You gave them this much money, you had to give me as much as you could for that. Okay.
Rest went through the fish units?
This is in 2004.
Yeah, you picked it up together.
But this dredging went all the way down to...
You cleaned it up to fairly close.
Yeah. So when you can see that this really, like... This pile here.
Oh, it's up high. Yeah. It's covering.
That's likely well beyond the bottom plate.
It is.
So yeah. Right against them.
Yeah.
And the only question we had is like, did you ever take a look at just moving the trash rack, moving it out so it's horizontal, with a more horizontal flow, and in there, and then putting some plate on the very bottom? That was the only question we had early on. Was
You brought that up at the last meeting.
Yeah.
One of the issues though is how would you break that?
Not fun.
You
basically doing it underwater construction.
Well, not only that, but you wouldn't have a crane that could reach it.
Well, that was the question. It's like, if you did that, then you have to refabricate a crane. It's super expensive. And that was
the crane would work really good.
The tack crane might do it. We had it only we well. But no, I mean, that was super expensive. I mean, if you guys think you can do it with what you got out there and it's cost effective, I'm all for it. All we wanted to do long term was the letter came out and says, hey, you guys are turning off your turbines every night. That's really hard on the units. We have no auxiliary water supply system for this thing. If those turbines go down, you've lost your ladder. So we're trying to get rebut liability into your ladder because this is the primary passage route for fish. And we need to get that reliability. If you can get that reliability through what you've got planned, I'm all for it. My concern is O&M is problematic. And I hate basically making a reliability based on O&M funding and us being due diligent, us scaring them with like you're not following the buyout.
Well, I think that's what we have to do now. I mean, anything that we build out there that's like an automated rake is going to have its own O&M maintenance.
I was hoping if there would be a structural fix or something that could make.
Oh yeah,
that's why we went after that wall. Yeah. We were all excited about that. And Lori said she thought it had a chance to work. And Lori talked about hydraulics. She listened, but it was just too overwhelming that configuration.
No, I can see.
You could probably make a wall work, but it would be such a huge structure. You're talking millions and millions.
It's another dam.
I've built a 35-foot high copper dam before across a 150-foot channel.
Yeah.
And that was a $20 million copper dam.
That
was in New Orleans.
You saw the wall we built at the Dalles. That was only 62.
51.
No, 51 billion. 19. Yeah, so we built long, deep walls.
Yeah, that was very expensive.
So you just got to remember, we had our CRFM. We spend money like crazy.
Yeah.
At least till 2018.
All right.
Away. All right. Is that
it? No, I think you guys are on the right track.
Make it happen.
Yeah. Yeah. Going
so, Tammy,
try to keep it happen.
You're going to keep working for the 20 years. Because you're going to be the gatekeeper.
We're going to be looking at you.
I only have 17 years left.
Okay, it's close to 20 because I should be retiring.
Hey, thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Great meetings.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if I get a virus, Tammy?
I hope you do because Probably the power of suggesting.
Catherine, if you're still on the phone, thank you.
I will recycle that back to Cindy, and then she'll give it back to you.
Thank you. I'll talk to you later.
Yep. Okay, bye.
Cool, thanks.
Whoops.
Thanks,
guys.
See ya.
All right, you.
See ya.
We're going to get the DNR.
Love it.
Okay, so question.
Yeah.
when you say wrapped up, teeth design. That's like a cloud in the sky right now. So
yeah,
how do we want to?
In talking with Jim, he thought that this was like a 1-2 sheet type thing we could do.
Oh yeah, no,
and turn it over to the project. It'll be small enough that their contracting unit can handle it, and so we're not having to go through the expense of a full blown PNS package, ATR, all this.
I'm on that same. But do we need to include it with the DDR?
Yeah,
that's kind of the.
I think so.
Because it's going to take a little while.
Well,
because I've got to coordinate with the project and make sure that they're okay with what I'm proposing, right? And because they were talking teeth that are hooked and all this business.
Well, you know, you get the interesting note from Hausman. You know, who the hell's he been talking to out there?
Yeah.
What's he talking about?
That's what frustrates me. You have to. That's why you develop members. You know, if you talk to me, you would expect that you don't have to go talk to Laura about it. You know, I should be talking to her. You should be talking to Jim, you know. And the same thing with the project. They need to be talking to Kevin about it.
That's right.
And Kevin needs to be letting everybody else know. And if they're not,